This is Access Radio Chicago, AM 750 WNDZ, Portage, Indiana, Chicago.
The views, opinions, and beliefs expressed on this radio program by the hosts, co-hosts, guests, and or callers do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station and its ownership. The following program, Golfers on Golf, is paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio, hosted by Ed Stevenson, Phil Berger, Rory Spears, and Len Zien, Chicago's favorite foursome.
All right, Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, the show's Golfers on Golf, calling you to the tee. It's a beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous Saturday morning here in the Chicago area. And live in studio this morning, I'm PGA professional Ed Stevenson, alongside PGA Life member, former touring professional Bill Berger. And also in studio, we have sports journalist Rory Spears, and on the line from, I believe, from Florida, if not hitting the road again, we've got Len Zien, the Illinois Golf Hall of Famer. So we've got, hey, we've got our foursome together, guys. And of course, why wouldn't we? It's a it's U.S. Open Saturday, and lots to talk about in the hour coming up. We're going to bring you the world of golf from a Chicago area perspective. Of course, the eyes of the world of golf are on Los Angeles, the West Coast. A lot of conversation about the venue, the Los Angeles Country Club. Brooks Koepka is not a huge fan, but I think others are. In particular, one Mr. Ricky Fowler, who was becoming somewhat Mr. Irrelevant not that long ago. I believe Ricky has started the championship by birdieing 18 out of the first 36 holes. Some bogeys sprinkled in there, too, but he is up at the top of the leaderboard. So, guys, happy Saturday. And hey, Len, I'm going to start with you. Are you you in Florida or on the road? And are you being able to keep an eye on this U.S. Open Championship?
Well, I tell you, I can't take. Yeah, we're back in Florida, but I can't take my eyes off of it. This has been a fascinating U.S. Open. It doesn't seem like a U.S. Open with the scores that are up there, especially the way Ricky's been playing. But you know, it's great. You know, it's just great to see him bouncing back and getting his game together. He's such a popular player and so good for golf. You know, it's not that I'm would be cheering against anybody else, of course, but Ricky Fowler would be a very, very popular champion if he can hold on for two more rounds.
There's no doubt about it. And, you know, really, as Ricky started to fade in the world rankings and struggled, you know, some guys would have maybe coasted along on some money they got from endorsement deals and other things. But I believe Ricky teamed up with Butch Harmon, and according to Butch, really put in the work. So as much as it may be a surprise to some of us, so those that have been closest to Ricky Fowler are recognizing what we've all learned in golf, that sometimes it's not who's the luckiest, and sometimes it's not who's the best. It's who works the hardest.
Yeah, Ricky, you know, he could have certainly cashed in with the live and stuff like that, but I think that his focus was in the right place, that he wanted to get better and then think about what he should do next. And that's right. It was the right decision for him. He didn't get caught up in the minutia that's been going back and forth for so many players, you know, the last couple of years. I mean, He's put his focus in the right place, and now it seems like this whole year he's been a much better player this year, and it's all paid off. His focus on himself and his own game has been the right thing for him.
Well, always nice to see hard work pay off. We've got a very exciting 2 days left before we crown a champion or more, of course, in the U.S. Open. If there's a playoff, it goes to another 18 holes. So, that changed, didn't it, Rory?
Yeah, they went to a four hole that was a three hole, and now I believe it's down to a two hole aggregate, and so we will see. It'll be interesting.
I'm having flashback memories to you know, Tiger Woods' win over
Rocco Media.
Rocco Media, yeah. Exactly.
And then there was one at Southern Hills too that they got in 2001, I believe. Might have been Retief Goosen and Kenny Perry, somebody like that fought it out on Monday at Southern Hills there. So, Yeah, it's been an interesting week so far, and to see who's on the leaderboard and who isn't. And some guys are enjoying the golf course a little bit more than others. And, you know, our guest from last week, Gary D'Amato, the Wisconsin.golf writer and Wisconsin Golf Hall of Famer, is, you know, he's been very vocal. I tried to get Gary to at least record something with us for this morning. But he unfortunately goes all the way out to L.A. and is a little under the weather. So, but anyway, we wish him to feel better. But he's seeing a lot of positive things being said about this golf course when certain things are happening there. That's exactly what happened at Erin Hills, and Erin Hills was criticized by some of the same people for the same thing. So he's been making an argument that. Let's call it what it is. If you're gonna criticize Erin Hills, you need to criticize this venue as well. And so it's been interesting. There's been a lot of feedback on his social media accounts regarding that, Ed.
Yeah, well, it's you know, been fun to watch some of the conversation about the venue. I know you had tipped us off last week, Rory, that your sources said that the rough didn't quite grow in the way that the USGA wanted, and of course. West Coast golf can be a little bit different. You know, Billy, we're going to ask you real quickly. I know in your days of playing tour golf, did you end up competing on the West Coast? And a little different than going through the Southeast or here in the Midwest, I imagine.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, Eddie, I didn't play out there much, only a couple times. But, you know, you can even tell by the turf, you know, it's got those big clumps of grass that are different, you know, and backup shots, if you notice, hitting those lob shots, they stop going, rolling back downhill, you know.
Right.
You know, that different shot completely that, you know, and bunker shots, you know, they're all, I don't know if you can stick a bunker shot. They all run out on you.
Especially on those firm, fast, hard USGA-prepared greens for a championship like this. But, you know, Rory, I know that as we focus on U.S. Open, this is tournament season here around home, too. And certainly U.S. Open is not the only thing that's been going on.
Yeah, we've had the Illinois State Women's Amateur Championship this week, played out at the Grove Country Club in Long Grove. And joining us on the line this morning is the 2023 champion, a two-time winner of the event, Sarah Arnold. Sarah, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. So, Sarah, tell us, are you in the caddy shack at Glen Oak today, perhaps hoping to get a loop before the day's over?
Yeah, I am, actually.
Well, give our best to Danny Mulhern, a great professional there who runs that golf course. But, Sarah, you know, interesting year, the 90th year of the Illinois State Women's Golf Association and the State Amateur Championship. You won this championship in 2019, and to do it, you got to the finals and you had to go up against a really good player who's also a past champion in the event in Grace Curran. And tell us a little bit about the stretch, because you had a lead and then you had to see the match go into extra holes before you could win it.
Yeah, so it was really great going up against Grace. I knew she was a great player, and it was going to be a really competitive match. But, you know, during the holes, I was two up, but I knew I couldn't let my guard down because she can do some really awesome stuff out there. So, I just try to keep my cool and play my game and just try to stay consistent with it. And it got really close there at the end, and I really didn't know what was going to happen, but I was able to keep it together.
Well, Sarah, Ed Stevenson here. Congratulations on the victory. And, you know, we've had some amazing weather here in the Chicago area, kind of extended drought, of course, conditions perhaps getting a little firm or different in places, but, was there anything particular in your preparation for this championship that was a little different or felt gave you an edge going into this year?
I would say my putting. I really tried to focus on my putting stroke and really get a hang of the green speeds. I knew that was going to be a big thing, is just getting the speeds right. And if they drop, they drop. And for the most part, my putting was really what saved me out there. I hit some good shots into the green, and then to be able to capitalize with some putts really helped me.
Well, Sarah, I know that when I spoke to you after you had won your semifinal match, you said that winning this tournament would mean a lot to you. Now that you've had a couple of days for it to sink in a little bit, you know, how good does this feel? And I hope you've had a chance to get out and maybe celebrate a little bit with your family and friends.
Yeah, it feels great. I mean, it still hasn't sunk in for me. I don't think I've just been going about my days, just, you know, and then in the back of my head, I'm like, wow, I really am the 2023 State Am champ. And, but yeah, we went out to dinner the night of, cause I was just super excited. And, to be able to win it again, especially on the 90th year, it's pretty awesome. And to have my name there twice on the trophy, yeah, it's just pretty unbelievable.
Well, you know, Sarah, recently we've seen some things on TV, especially Steve Stricker. He's been out there having his wife caddy, having his daughter caddy. And what was it like for you to, you know, be able to share this moment? I know you had your father out there caddying for a couple of days with you, and something like that's got to be a really good feeling.
Yeah, I enjoyed having my dad out there. He worked on Monday, so he wasn't able to attend for that day, but the other 3 days he actually took time off work just because I made it that far, and it was really great. He really kept me calm throughout the whole matches that I've been playing, and he just helped out a lot. He gave me a lot of confidence on my reads for my putts and everything, and yeah, it was great.
Well, so you've had awesome, especially heading into a Father's Day weekend. That's really nice to be able to share that victory with your dad. And then, you know, the life of a golfer. I know your name's on the trophy. You've got this behind you, but of course the season continues on. And I know you've probably got your competitive schedule pretty well planned out for the months ahead. But for our listeners, what's next?
So I have the US Am qualifier on June 26th. I'm going to try and qualify for that at Indian Hill Club. Then I've got the Women's Western Golf Association tournament at White Eagle, I think, and the US Open at Mistwood, and there's a few others on there. I can't remember, but there's a lot out there.
Well, Sarah, it sounds like you'll get some good prep before you go back to school, and I believe you have 1 year left to play college golf at Western Kentucky University.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right.
And then after that, it's kind of well, maybe you'll figure it out when the time comes and the eligibility runs out. If you want to stay involved in golf past that, turn professional or other play as an amateur at major amateur tournaments?
Yep, we will see.
Okay. Hey, I got to ask you one more thing here, and we'll let you go, because I know at any moment you might be called upon to go carry a bag around Glen Oak Country Club. But, you know, they always say that when people are growing up and players were younger, they stood on a putting green and they said, geez, I need this putt to win the U.S. Open or win the Masters or something like that. I'm sure you've probably had some of those type situations when you've been practicing over the years. Does any of that kick in when you're standing over a potential birdie putt there on the 19th hole to win the state amateur championship?
Yeah, so it's... In the moment when I'm standing over that putt, I know it's to win, and I know that, like, if this goes in, I win. But also, if it doesn't go in, we go on to extra holes, which I really didn't want to do. So I really just told myself, let's just put a good stroke on it and put a good speed on it, and if it goes in, it goes in, and I win. And as soon as I saw that putt tracking and drop in, I just had a sigh of relief, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, I'm the champion. So.
Well, that had to be just a really great feeling. And again, Sarah, I know you're probably getting ready to head out on the golf course and do some caddying today. So I will. We're going to let you run along. Thanks for taking a few minutes out of your schedule this morning to join us live here on Golfers on Golf Radio. And whether you're a professional or whether you're still an amateur, we hope that you get a chance to play some golf around town, not only this summer, but next summer ahead. And congratulations again on a great effort this week in the Illinois State Women's Amateur Championship at the Grove Country Club.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on the radio.
Okay. We'll be rooting for you, Sarah. Good luck.
Okay. That's Sarah Arnold, and she's sitting in the caddy shack waiting for a loop today out at Glen Oak, because when she's not playing golf, she's out there carrying the golf bags around.
Well, and that's the path for lots of golfers who make their way and compete a lot. I think sometimes golfers don't realize that that individual on their bag. Could probably pull the clubs out, not even using their own, and spot them five aside and give them a pretty good run for their money.
Billy, did you ever caddy?
Oh, once or twice. Let me say this: winning a championship in caddying, you wind up giving a lot of free lessons, because every bag you get, and I'm sure Eddie could attest to this, that the person you're caddying for, male or female, says, well, what did I do wrong there? So there's a lot of free lessons in that side of the ball,
Can't value a good caddy enough. But Rory, it's interesting as you visit places like Stream Song or Sand Valley, and you've got someone on the bag. There are obviously some great caddies, helpful to get the inside knowledge on those courses. But I know I've had opportunity to be up at Sand Valley and have someone like, Adam Miller with our group. Adam is typically in the thick of it, if not winning the state amateur championship in Wisconsin. And, you just never quite know who's on the bag, and pretty amazing. And even on the tour, some of these tour caddies, it's amazing what good players they are, and probably were just one part of their game away from actually being on the other side of the equation, playing the tour and having someone carry their bag. I know even the last time when the BMW was in 2019 at Medina, our course at the Preserve at Oak Meadows had some groups come out, and
Joel Dahman
was out at the Preserve. You asked him about it, and I remember hearing from our staff, I said, hey, how did the Dahman group play? They said, oh, it was pretty amazing. There was an eagle on 15, an eagle on 16, a birdie on 17. I said, really? Joel Dahman did that? No, his caddy did. So pretty high level of play from a lot of these loopers.
Len Zeem, I know you and I have had the great experience of learning a lot about the caddying programs, especially when you're near the home base of the Western Golf Association and the Evan Scholar Foundation. Lenny, did you ever do any caddying growing up?
Oh, I did a lot of it, yeah. Nobody was asking me for tips, though, but I did a lot of caddying at Inverness for, up until probably ages 12 to 16, maybe, something like that. Did a lot of caddying over there. It was a good program, caddy in Inverness there, and there was, there wasn't a whole lot of other jobs you could get. After 16 or 17, I took on some other things, but caddying was fun. It did develop. You learn a lot about golf, regardless of how good the player is, whose bag you're carrying. But you do learn a lot about golf. I'm sure it helped me develop my interest in golf for sure by spending those years in the summer lugging a bag around. I was never quite strong enough at that age to carry doubles very often, but. But it was good exercise and a good way to stay out of trouble to work on the golf course.
Len, my daughters are in their third season of caddying out at Medina Country Club, and actually the club's been terrific. It's been great opportunity. I grew up caddying at Briarwood Country Club in Deerfield and had some summers where I was the the caddy manager, and it was interesting. They came home last week, and they said they were part of this four-group outing, and they said they got some help caddying. I said, what do you mean you got help? They said, well, there was this guy who spent four holes with each group, and he was giving the golfers tips. He was helping read the putts. He was really helped us do our job caddying. I said, who was it? It was Tom Watson. So Tom Watson was engaged to come out and spend about four holes with each of these foursomes. And my daughters just looked at it and said, hey, great to meet Tom Watson. And even better to have help on some of these reads out here on course one.
Yeah, wow. Well, Lenny, we touched a little bit on the U.S. Open at the top. But from down in your studio there at the Palmare Country Club in beautiful Sarasota, Florida, what have you seen from the Open here so far the first couple days?
Well, you know what? I the biggest surprise to me was, of course, Justin Thomas and Koepka, Brooks Koepka, not playing nearly up to their abilities. Those were both players that I would have thought would be right in the thick of the competition. But these things can happen. The scores, I just can't get over that. That's so unlike any U.S. Open to have. Especially the first round when it was Schauffele, who, by the way, was my pick to win even before the season started. My pick on the International Network of Golf Fantasy Pool. He's looking pretty good, but it was so unlike having scores like the 262s in the U.S. Open. It defied the imagination. I just didn't know what to make of Los Angeles Country Club at all when I was seeing scores like that, but. The USGA has a way of working on a golf course and setting it up differently when a good low score is like that may embarrass the membership. They fear that might happen, but we'll get the real measure of it these last two rounds. There we still have Nick Hardy out there playing, and so it's a good U.S. Open. It's a lot different than most of all that I've ever seen, but. But they're all good U.S. Opens, and this one's just a little different.
Well, Len, I know that you mentioned your choice, and I remember my pick from January 3rd in the year-long ING golf fantasy pool. And my thoughts was he always plays well in California, and I picked Dustin Johnson to win this tournament, and he's had a respectable first couple days. So I'm going to hope that he can stay in there and keep his name on the leaderboard and be around the top of it. You know what? Ed just mentioned Medina, and the word BMW Championship came up, and I know everyone's excited to see it on the South Suburbs this year, and Olympia Fields getting a redo because their last attempt at hosting it was in the middle of COVID, and almost nobody was allowed on the property to actually see it in person. So it'll be nice to see large galleries out there watching that championship this year. But previously to that, in 2019, the BMW Championship visited Medina, and the conditions were perfect. There was some rain, just enough for the tour to let the players have right. some lift clean in place, and they tore it apart. And the discussion that weekend in the media center and among fans was, well, how long is it going to take for this club to do something to the golf course? Because they can't be happy that somebody shot 25 under par. And I had the chance to talk to Justin Thomas last year at the BMW, and I said, did you hear that the club is going to do a renovation of the golf course? And he said, well, I hope it's not just because of what I shot, because we had extremely outstanding conditions that week, and a lot of things got to fall into place for that to happen. But as we all know, shortly thereafterwards, the club put together a committee, and they ended up hiring the from Australia, the OCM Architecture and Design Group of Jeff Ogilvy, Ashley Mead, and Jeff Cocking, OCM, to come in and redo Medina course number 3. And yesterday, in his really his first sit-down interview at Medina, I spoke with Jeff Cocking a little bit about the project, and here's a small snippet of what you're going to hear later this week on GolfersOnGolf.com, and more so on this program in the weeks ahead.
That was part of it, yeah. We just felt like, so the three par threes, you know, 13, 17 and 2 were fairly similar. 13 and 17 were very similar because they both played in the same direction and both crossed Lake Kadaija, similar length. Then we didn't feel that there was a sort of a world-class short par 4, and we didn't feel like the lake had been taken to its full advantage. So if you were given this land without a golf course, you know, you would have absolutely tried to work that water into a perhaps a more interesting way than just playing directly across it with, you know, the 14th par 5 and then the 3 par 3s. And the way it was used, typically, it typically affected the average golfer, not the very good golfer. And so that was kind of the genesis of the idea of rerouting the last six. And, you know, it's probably started with 17. Every time we stood on 17, our eyes just kind of gravitated to the right where you saw this long diagonal line of water. And it felt like it could be a great short par 4, like a cape hole. And then with that change, we were able to make a change to one of the other par 3s where it played alongside the water rather than over the water. And we used the water on more of a diagonal rather than directly across. So, yeah, that was kind of – there were three or four things that kind of played in our minds, and that was why we suggested that major change.
All right, that is architect Michael Cocking, and I had a chance to catch up with him yesterday at Medina and then go out and walk some of the holes. And, Ed, I've got some photos of Michael standing in the bunkers that they've put in the fairway on the 18th hole. And not only did Michael fit, but you could probably fit about 100 people in there with him. And believe it or not, I think you could park a tank in some of those bunkers and people standing on the other side wouldn't see the tank. So there's going to be some depth. And you know what I do like is the 18th hole now does not go straight towards the clubhouse anymore. It actually goes west towards Medina Road. And if you stand on the green, you're going to have to look to your right to actually see the clubhouse. And not only between that green and the clubhouse, but as you come up the driveway, certain trees have been taken out. They've opened up some nice views to the clubhouse. And I think it's going to be a real interesting design. I'm looking forward to seeing people play the 17th hole, a par 3 going over the water back to the south side of the water that comes off instead of going north towards the clubhouse. So there's some interesting changes there, and it'll be interesting to see how everybody plays it, not only the members and their guests, but when the President's Cup arrives in 2026. And we're going to have more on that. I'm putting together something we will see on golfersongolf.com. I think I'll title it something like Medina Number 3, Bigger, Bolder, and Arguably Better.
Well,
so
there you go. You've been thinking it out and planning it. And I think a lot of thought and planning did go into the redesign. I know looking at the initial renderings of the redesign, you see a lot of things on the front nine that look familiar, look similar. And the deeper you get into the layout, the latter holes, last six, as you mentioned, you see some things that just are very much a change from how we last knew course number 3. I was on Medina Road this morning, and here it is, a Saturday. They're at work. You know, there's where green for 17 used to be. Paths going in, work right along the shoreline of the lake there, and clearly it is full speed ahead at this point, and it will be fascinating. I know. Over the years, there are some courses that seem to stay the same year in and year out, decade in and decade out. Course number 3, anything but. This is, how many times, even over your era, Billy, has there been discussion of the new version of course number 3? It's been a lot of change over the years.
Well, there is a lot of changes. And yesterday, I stood under the arch of the entrance where the security gate is, and right there. I mean, you look straight ahead, and there's nothing but an army of workers and dirt piles going on. And I took a picture, sort of a welcome to Medina. Here's our new look, and from standing right there. And I think people enjoy kind of seeing what's happening there as we pull this all together. With that, we are going to take a break here, and we will be back with Story Snyder from Bettinardi Golf, who's going to fill us in a little bit on the on the history of the putter used by defending U.S. Open champion Andrew Fitzpatrick, and a little bit more, and some new things that Bettinardi Golf has planned right after this. Erin Hills, one of Wisconsin's top public golf destinations and a top 100 rated golf course, is ready to welcome golfers to a championship golf experience. Erin Hills is where you can enjoy walking on the rolling hills of the Kettle Moraine area just northwest of Milwaukee. Erin Hills has already hosted four USGA championships, including the U.S. Amateur and the 2017 U.S. Open. Now, a fifth USGA championship is coming in 2025, and this time it's the ladies' turn when the Women's U.S. Open arrives. It's also one of six U.S. Open courses open for public play. Now at Erin Hills is the 63,000-square-foot putting green, the Drumlin, open for unlimited use for those with a scheduled tee time. While at Erin Hills, you can stay in rooms over the Irish pub or in one of the several cottages right on property. During the warm days of summer, enjoy beverages like a Fescue Rescue or a cold Erin Hills Pilsner. So book your tee times now, because tee times and rooms are going quickly. So book your play and stay by calling Erin Hills at 866-772-4769 or visit erinhills.com. Misswood Golf Club, located on Renwick Road in Romeoville, is one of the Chicago area's finest public golf facilities, where golfers find a commitment to excellence by the owners, the McWethy family. Misswood Golf Club, designed and renovated by architect Ray Hearn, is a links-style golf course with 20 sidewall bunkers like those found in Scotland or Ireland. Misswood has played host to several championships, including the state amateur, and it's the yearly home of the Illinois Women's Open. The driving range and performance center comes with natural grass hitting areas and indoor hitting bays, perfect for lessons, practice, or club fittings. Before or after your round, stop in and enjoy the bar and grill in the performance center or dining in McWethy's Tavern in the main clubhouse. So make your tee times today by calling 815-254-3333 or visit online mistwoodgc.com.
All right, we're back. It's a little bit past 10:30. You're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio, bringing you the world of golf from a Chicago area perspective. We've got in studio today Bill Berger. I'm Ed Stevenson. Alongside me is Rory Spears. And, of course, Len Zeem is co-hosting on the line with us. And, guys, a lot of talk about the U.S. Open. Of course, this week, it was a year ago, our eyes were to the East Coast at Brookline, Massachusetts, you know, dialed into that championship. Now we're looking west at a very different venue, but, you know, that's what makes it fun. We've seen, you know, some of the same guys in the mix, a few changes to the leaderboard, and lots to follow this weekend. Fun to see the difference in venue, fun to see some of the differences in equipment, too.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And last year, Matt Fitzpatrick, who spent a short little time at Northwestern before he went on to focus on his career, he won the U.S. Amateur and then, of course, won the U.S. Open last year. But he had a putter in his golf bag that came, in essence, from right here in the Chicago area, down in the south suburbs in Tinley Park and Bettinardi Golf. And to tell us a little bit more about that story and all the things going on with Bettinardi Golf, is Story Snyder, the Director of Corporate Events and Partnerships. Story, welcome to Golfers on Golf.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
We're good. And I got to believe that last year on Sunday night when Matt Fitzpatrick hoisted that trophy, there was probably a pretty good feeling for yourself and Bob Bettinardi and the rest of the Bettinardis and everybody down in Tinley Park seeing him hoist that trophy, knowing that he had won it with a Bettinardi putter in his golf bag.
Yeah, it was electric for sure. Bob and Sam Bettinardi were texting me back and forth, and we couldn't believe what was happening. I think whenever Matt sunk that final putt, I think Bob may have jumped into his pool, screaming and yelling, so excited. But what a great victory for the Bettinardi family, both, you know, personally and at the company. It was phenomenal.
Well, Story, tell us a little bit more about Bettinardi Golf. You know, some people don't even realize that the company has some Chicago roots to it. I know you look at Tour Edge and Wilson Golf and some of the companies that seem to, you know, do a lot more advertising and have more exposure about their products. People say, oh, yeah, they're a Chicago company. But sometimes lost in the mix is your great company, Bettinardi. And, you know, if people are looking for really a top-end putter, you guys are the place to find them. And maybe not just always in Tinley Park anymore, but coming to a new location in the Oak Brook area as well.
We're a family-owned business. It's owned by Bob and Ann Bettinardi. Bob's at the office every single day. Sam Bettinardi is the president of Bettinardi Golf. We've been in business for 25 years. You know, Bob started making putters back in 1990, and he's the one that innovated the one-piece mill technology, which is he milled a putter out of one block of stainless steel. So, you know, fast forward 25 years, over 100 PGA Tour victories. We are expanding and opening up a new retail location in Oak Brook. Our current situation is we have about a 1,200 square foot putting facility in Tinley Park. We want to give that opportunity for the fitting experience to the masses, a little bit more convenient to the city and the airports. So we're going to be opening up at Oak Brook. We're going to be about 7,000 square feet where you can come get custom fit for your putter, get custom fit for your wedges. We're going to have some, you know, retail location or retail space. And the importance of putting is so important, or the fitting of the putting. And we're excited to do it. It's been great for us. And like you said, we are a little bit less known. We're very niche because we're more of the classic putter head shapes. And they're milled. Some people like the inserts and whatnot, but we're chosen by people. We don't have to pay, you know, players in and out every single week, and people just come to us. So it's crazy.
Story, I have to ask you. I know that Bettinardi Golf has been making some wedges, but can you take credit for the club that Matt recorded the hole in one with the other day at the U.S. Open?
Yeah, sure. I'll take all the credit in the world. No, unfortunately, Matt does not play our wedges. He has a deal with Titleist, so he plays the wedges, the balls, and the glove. And it was fantastic. The look on his face whenever he made that is Matt. You know, Matt is a very private, quiet kid, very knowledgeable, just a student of the game. When we get to spend some time with him and see, you know, he breaks out of his shell a little bit, that smile that he had on his face and his giggle is, that's Matt. He is such a lovable young man, and just a joy to be around.
Well, the story, Ed Stevenson here, there's no doubt making putts and having the ball go in the hole, however you do it, definitely puts smiles on faces. And you touched on it a little bit with the existing location and then the new location. Getting the right putter, a properly fit putter into people's hands is really a huge part of it. You know, for anyone that is just putting with a putter that doesn't fit them, it'd be in some ways like someone who wanted to get serious about being a runner, going to run a 10K or a half marathon with shoes that don't fit, just pulling something off the shelf. So, you know, you used the word experience, someone coming in for a fitting experience, and more people will get that. Walk us through a bit more. Someone who schedules an appointment to come and get a fitting, what is that experience like, and what can they expect during the time they're there?
No, thank you so much. That's a great question. Let me rephrase that. Most people are going to go get fit for their driver, right?
Sure.
Most people. Okay, how many times do you hit your driver wrong? Maybe 14 max. People are going to go get fit for their irons, but the whole game is based around the short game. I was a club professional for 11 years. I love the short game. And people just don't, you know, like you said, getting fit for the right running shoe. You hit your driver 14 times, and that's the first thing that everybody wants to go get fit for. Well, let's say on average you're going to hit your putter 36 times. Why would you just take something off the rack because it looks good and then hit it? What happens is people start to manipulate their stroke. So it's going to open their face, close their face, because they may have the wrong neck in it. what we do at Bettinardi, I had Ken Griffey Jr. in on Thursday morning, and we blew his mind. He's been calling me and texting me, spending a lot of time over the last couple of days because we tweaked some things with his putter. And he calls me. He's like, I've never putted so good in my life. He's like, hurry up and get my putter done. Let's go. Let's get this going. And so, you know, whenever you hear comments like that, George Burge, who won the BMW last week, same thing. He said, I've never made so many putts in my life. This is the greatest thing I've ever done. It's because people don't go through the correct fitting experience. So what happens is you'll come in. We've got some unbelievable fitters at our studio right now. We're going to have, you know, increase that staff in Oak Brook. But we're going to come in, we're going to fit the putter to you. We're not going to fit you to the putter, which I think is something that people don't really fully understand. If you have let's take Bubba Watson, for example. You're not going to go change his golf swing whenever he gets it in perfect position every single time and hits it like he does, right? You're going to have to fit the club to the player. So we want to see your natural stroke. We want to see how the ball comes off of that base. With our technology, we use Quintech, which is going to give you ball and club data. It's going to show you your top spin. It's going to show you how the loft on your putter. So is it jumping up 4 inches, hitting the ground, and then rolling? That's not what you want. Are you cutting your putt? We can manipulate the golf club so that you can get that putt online quicker, roll true, and feel comfortable with your natural stroke, which is, If you think about it, we just want you to point and shoot, you know, point and shoot. Don't think about it. Don't try to manipulate your hands. Don't try to do anything other than what comes natural to you. And we're able to fit you into a putter that you can do that. And you can see the data. You can see it rolling. We have everything up on the screen. And it is, it's mind blowing. It really is. If you're a data geek, you want to see it. And it makes you think a little bit differently about the putter. And then what it's going to do is it's going to give you that confidence that whenever you're on the greens, you're like, okay, this is easy. I can make putts now. And it is, we've changed people's lives. Well, we're not even doctors.
Love it. It's it's true. And it's such an essential part of everybody's game. And big believer that if you can measure it, you can manage it. And we are in the era where there's more data now than ever. With the data on time, it's 10:42. You're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. I'm Ed Stevenson alongside Rory Spears and Bill Berger. We've got Story Snyder on the line talking about Bettinari putters and really this amazing connection and opportunity in the Chicago area. And, hey, Len Ziem, we've got Len Ziem on the line as well. I'm certain you've got some things to ask Story and about Bettinari.
Well, you know, I'm embarrassed to say that I don't know the Bettinardi people very well, even though I've been writing in the Chicago area for way too many years. But I tell you, I can't quite put my hand. I'm a guy who's stuck with one putter now for about 10 years, and it doesn't, not that it works that well, but I can't. I'm trying to put my arms around the fitting for a putter and just how the sessions work. Are they long sessions, much like they'd be when you are getting fitted for wedges or for drivers? I mean, is there much difference in the way you're actually conducting the fitting sessions?
Yeah, so I'll give you the short version. Okay, with a name like Story, I like to talk, right? So when you come in, real quick, we're going to say, okay, pick a head shape that you like. You know, we have four different lines of putters. What do you like to look at? Do you like the classic blade? Do you like a mallet? Do you like a mid-mallet? What do you like? You're going to pick a couple heads that you like to look at. We're then going to go ahead and we're going to get you fit up for basically where your eyes are set, where your hands are set, the length. We're going to have you hit a couple putts. We're going to be able to tell just by eye, because we've done so many of these, what type of configuration you need, which means the neck. Do you need a plumber's neck? Do you need a spud neck? Do you need a flow neck? That's all going to be based off of toe hang and how much arc you have in your putting stroke. From there, we're going to get you on Quintech, which is going to show you the data. You're going to hit some putts. We're going to look and see what the golf ball is doing. We're going to look and see what the club is doing. We're going to alter, we could bend the putter upright, flat, We can adjust the loft, right one, whenever you're there during the fitting, and we go through the process. Now, there's obviously a little bit more that goes into it with our fitters, and we're going to get you in what the data shows, what we see, and what makes you feel comfortable into that configuration that you like. There's also three different face millings we have. We have the honeycomb that Bob patented back in 1991. We have a fly mill, which is The honeycomb is our firmest face. Then you have a fly mill that is like a medium face. And then we have our roll control, which is a soft face. So now we're going to get the sound, the feel of the face that you like coming off. And then we're going to put you into that putter that is going to basically be the look, the feel, and the specs of your putting stroke that's going to get you rolling the golf ball the right way. You know, if you're too upright, you may be aiming the putter 2 or 3 inches right of where you think you're aimed. We can fix that. The putting fitting takes about an hour or less. Sometimes it's less. I mean, sometimes we get guys in there that, you know, they're really close. We make one or two little tweaks, and then there's guys that we've got to make a bunch of different tweaks. But it takes about an hour for the fitting. And you'll come out and it is, I was using the wrong putter for 14 years. And I go in, as soon as I get fit by these guys, now I'm standing over a 15 footer. I feel like I can make putts now. And my first original email in 1996 was Mr3Tap@AOL.com. And now I make putts, so I need to change it. So yeah, it takes about an hour. It takes about an hour. There is some stuff that goes into it because we want you to stand over, have that putter in your hands, feel comfortable, and feel like you can make putts.
Well, Story, I got to ask. Yeah, I got to ask you this question. I know that sometimes I've seen some of the beehives, as you call them, get launched. There's been some different themes out there. And yeah. I got to believe a lot of the junior golfers would like to get their hands on what I saw here in the last week. Some putters and head covers theme styled towards the Decepticons and the Autobots and the Bumblebee putter and a few others. Yeah. Tell us about that theme, how it came to be, and what's been the response to it?
Yeah, so last year we did a collab with Hasbro and the Monopoly brand. And it was simply amazing. You know, it was over 3 days. We sold out of everything in under 4 minutes. We've got a huge collector community out there that collects head covers, putters, metal pieces, everything that we make. And it's great. I call it the sneaker game for adults. And Hasbro was so impressed with what we did, the product that we made, that they wanted to do some more. So they proposed Transformers to us. We've got a bunch of designers that love that type of stuff. And we were like, yeah, let's go. We're all in, especially because of the release of the movie that's coming out this next week, I believe. And so they wanted to do it again. So we did the Autobots versus Decepticons, and it went fantastic. You know, it's, again, everybody likes something different, and throwing it back to the 1980s and the original Transformers cartoon and products, it turned out great. So we've got a lot of companies that come to us that want to get into the golf world, and what better way to do it than with some custom product with their images and likeness on it, and we get to make it for them.
Well, Story, you are definitely taking putting into new territory. I think in nearly 30 years of this radio show, that's the first time the Decepticons have made it into our broadcast, and for good reason. And I know with new territory, you mentioned the Oak Brook location coming. Is there a specific location you're able to share yet for that venue?
Yeah. So unfortunately, I'm new to the Chicago area, so I've been here for 2 years. We are going to be located right next to Michael Jordan Steakhouse. Right across from the shopping mall.
Yeah.
And we're going to open it up. We're going to kick it off middle of August. Matt Fitzpatrick's going to be in town for the BMW. And we're going to have a little, you know, grand opening with Bob and Sam and Ann's friends, family, and some locals. And, yeah, we're going to kick it off August 15th. And I believe Matt and Bob and Sam are going to hit the ceremonial first putt in our location. We're going to have a large putting green. We're going to be in Oak Brook. We're so excited about it. The design is it's state of the art. It's going to be like anything anybody has ever seen around a putter company and a short game company, which is pretty impressive. You know, we're not very well known, and we're okay because the people that know us, they know us. I'm from Pennsylvania, so I compare us to, like, if you drink a Miller Lite, you can get Miller Lite everywhere, right? But if you see a Yingling, you know, on tap, sure, you're going to think, oh, Yingling, I love it. Yingling is family owned, you know? And if you know who they are and the product that they make, you're going to love it. So people that know us, they love it once they get into it. And we're just scratching the surface. The potential and the opportunity that we have in the golf business, we're doing it right. We're taking our time and making sure that we put the best product in the market out there. And Bob and Sam have done a fantastic job of taking their time and doing it right.
Well, Story, thanks so much for all the information. We're gonna look forward to seeing that new location get open. And one of these days, we're looking forward to coming down and visit you at the current location, still in Tinley Park, and see more of the line of wedges and putters that Bettinardi Golf creates. And thanks so much for jumping in here on U.S. Open weekend and telling us a little bit more about how it all came together for Matt Fitzpatrick last year at the U.S. Open Championship.
Being part of your show, and hope to do it again soon.
Looking forward to it, Story. Thanks.
Okay. It is 10:51, and time flies when we're having fun. And Lenzeem, what's on your calendar? Are you getting ready to head north? You got some more travel destinations to roll out to? What's happening down there?
Well, we've had, you know, the last 2 months, if I've never had quite the logging the miles in the car. We've been to Mississippi, Alabama, Pennsylvania, and this last week in Daytona for travel stuff. But we are, got this lined up today. We're coming back to Illinois for the John Deere Classic, and I'm really looking forward to that. It takes, lining these things up takes some planning and some arrangements to be made, but we're definitely going to be there for that one. And I'm hoping to, perhaps I had a tentative invite to come to the senior LPGA championship the week before in Jasper, Indiana. So we might be there in the Midwest a little sooner than normal. And I don't know how long we're going to stay beyond that, but now it's time to really catch up on some tournament coverage. I see a whole lot of tournaments in Florida in the winter time, but it's been a while since I've seen a birdie putt on the 18th on the line. So we're looking forward to getting back and seeing our friends and seeing some golf action in the Chicago area.
Yeah, well, Len, we're looking forward to seeing you. And, of course, you mentioned John Deere Classic. Very excited. Had the chance actually yesterday to speak a little bit with Barry Cronin, who, of course, handles the PR for that event. And it sounds like even with Claire Peterson, longtime friend of this show, moving on, that this year's John Deere Classic will not be holding back. It's going to be a good one. And hey, switching gears slightly, Len, Rory, Bill, I'm going to put you guys on the spot a little bit. I'm going to start with you, Bill. We were just talking about Bettinardi putters. It's amazing, really, Len. I'm with you. To realize how much putters can be customized, and the science and data going behind it, that whole fitting experience is fairly mind-blowing. I remember, Billy, and maybe you do too, putters were always, guys, 35 inches long. That was the standard length. Any of you guys know why putters were 35 inches in length as a standard for so long? You cut them down, Billy, because 35 was too long, right? Was that what you found usually?
Yeah, so
35 was too long. And Len, any reason 35 inches? Any reason for that one that you can think of?
Oh, you know, you bring that up. I see no reason why it should be such a regular length at all. That whole talk we just had with on Bettinardi putters is really kind of fascinated me. It's I feel like I'm a stick in the mud with the same putter that I've hit long after a period where I was felt like I was switching him every month, you know.
Well, it's a testament to your loyalty, Len. We call that loyalty, that you stuck with the same putter for 10 years. So let's recognize loyalty when it's due. But I'll give you the reason I learned that putters were 35 inches. Of course, back before the PGA superstores and fitting labs and everything else, putters were in pros golf shops, and they typically displayed them in a golf bag. So 35 inches was just long enough so that the putter head could stick out of the end of the golf bag, and it displayed better. So
yeah.
we were fitting putters to golf bags instead of to golfers, and no wonder this game's so hard.
And, you know, I don't know if right or wrong, but a feel in a putter always, I didn't care if it was a broom handle with a wooden
sure.
Whatever. But I would, if the putter didn't feel right, I would choke it a little or
shorten it
to the end and work with it a little bit, and it seemed to work out. I was never that technical about something like that.
And you still found a way to get that ball to the hole.
You know, Ed, I see some of these companies, they say, oh, well, we can fit you online, and, you know, you just tell us this and you tell us that, and, you know, we'll send you a putter. You know, I think the process that Story talked about, probably the best way to go get a putter that you want to put in your bag and you want to keep it there. There was an interesting concept last weekend at Heritage Oaks in Northbrook, and John Billiter, the head professional there, decided he had a whole bunch of the new Scotty Camerons from Titleist and said, you know what, we're going to haul the bags full of these putters out, and we're going to let people, instead of worrying about the data and putting on a mat inside or artificial turf, we're going to set up the putting green outside, the large putting green at Heritage Oaks. And we're just going to let people pick up a putter and in some ways, maybe a little old fashioned here, but go on out and test it on an actual putting green with not attached to any machine or Sam Putt Lab type thing, and just see how people like the feel of a brand new putter.
So that is the proof is in the putting version of it, instead of the data version.
Yeah, and it was amazing. There was a lot of people there. It came out especially on Saturday while the weather was nice, and I think there was several purchases made of people who ended up buying a new putter that day. So. Somewhat successful with that theory of just letting people get out and hit it on the golf course and see how it plays when you're on the course.
Let me ask this question. Is there some kind of mathematical statistic on facing a 3 or 4 putter for all the cheese? You know what I mean?
Well,
and for getting even worse.
Yeah, well,
so
Billy, you like to bet a little bit back in the day.
There's any technical advice on that.
Nerves of steel, Billy. That because we know the percentage goes down when all the money's on the line, and
brain power.
When someone says press, we know what that does as well. But speaking of press, guys, we are pressed for time. We want to thank our listeners for joining us today. We're going to be back on the air next week, right here on WNDZ at 10 a.m. We want to thank our producer Brian for getting us out to you, and of course our guests. Sarah Arnold, champion of the Women's State Amateur Championship, and Story Schneider with Bentonari Putters. You can find us online between the broadcast at golfersongolf.com. Until then, we want to wish all the fathers a very happy Father's Day weekend, and enjoy the beautiful weather and play well.
Happy Father's Day.
The preceding program, Golfers on Golf, was paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.